Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's go back to
2009
with Squidge. Let's look at the
Lions Tour
again with Squidge.
Hello and welcome to the Squidge Rugby World Cup Lions Tour retrospective podcast. The rugby podcast that this week has a brand new, very exciting hook that has never been seen in any rugby podcast ever before.
So it's not James Hook.
I don't remember what rugby is. I have...
You say it's never been seen in a rugby podcast before. Some people have listened to us before and realised
that's true.
That's a lie.
Yes. I have... Yes, okay. I think there's a few rugby podcasts out there that didn't know what rugby was in the first place.
Sure, sure. Such as our episode last week, you know.
There's a few by ex-pros where them forgetting what rugby is for medical reasons and... I regret making that joke so early.
Yeah.
That's risky. And also a massive issue that needs to be dealt with by World Rugby and currently is.
Yeah.
And not a debate I'm going to get into 40 seconds of the podcast. But I have somewhere in the last 2 weeks pretty much forgotten everything I used to know about rugby. And what I used to know about rugby made up about 87% of my brain. There was like 13% that was like how I like my crumpets done. And the original The Croods starring Nick
Cage.
Oh,
yes. Yeah, not a new age thing.
I have, since the last episode of the podcast, seen The Croods, A New Age.
Was it good? Did it begin?
It did actually begin.
A New Age did begin.
Like, okay. You got to the BBFC certificate and I thought, is A New Age going to begin?
Did they play Wooden Union at the start?
No. No, though I have seen World in Union somewhere in some film recently, and I can't remember what it was.
Oh,
but that's
man.
A really, really good story.
Yeah, it was.
So, yeah, no, it's perfectly fine. I had a pretty good time with it. It's pretty solid. You know, like, solid, passes the 90 minutes. That's the crew to New Age, fully reviewed for you.
And by the way...
about that more than I thought about rugby in the last 2 weeks.
When you say you, who do you mean?
I mean Robbie or Squidge or whatever you want to call me from that there YouTube. Who are you?
Nice. I'm Will Owen from, I guess, writing about rugby and stuff.
Yeah, so you have actually written stuff about rugby in the last few weeks.
Yeah. I mean, about rugby is a stretch, you know.
Yeah, whereas I've made a very deliberate choice post, you know, like, because and I think this will probably shock and upset a lot of listeners to hear that I've deliberately taken a few weeks off rugby because I was so burnt out after the Lions Tour.
Yeah. I'm kind of the same. The Lions Tour became so depressing on social media and everything that I decided I need a couple of weeks away. I've not really been playing rugby either, so because like it just all feels so like it's all a bit too much for me at the minute. So watching games from 2009 is about my level right now.
And I've been doing, you know, I've been doing the channel for about 3.5 years now. I've been doing it full time for quite a chunk of that. And that's meant that my days, you know, like, and it might seem sometimes like there's 3 weeks between videos I'm just laying about, but I'm often spending like 4 days watching back 3 Harlequins games or something.
Yeah.
Just, you know, what I intended to do today, but we didn't get to that. And often that'll be the case. Like, I'm spending so much of my time watching rugby back or reading about rugby or, you know, reading books or by whatever coach or so on that genuinely I don't think I'd gone a day without having to think about rugby in, I mean, possibly in the last 15 years, but certainly in the last...
Hey, maybe in your life. Been,
yeah, since the new age begun. So, yeah, and just, like, also, like, staying off, like, rugby social media. So I've got no idea what the discourse is beyond the fact that some people still think the All Blacks are pricks, which, you know, is pretty accurate
to
everything I've seen in the past.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was one tweet sent from the Squidge Rugby account, but it was not sent by me.
Oh, really?
So, yes.
What's the story there? Because I certainly didn't send it. Not that I have the password.
No, you didn't. The tweet, I'll read it out, so I've got
By the way, obviously I don't know the password. Could you just tell it to me now, please?
Yeah, sure. It's Nigel Owens. And bum. You've got to enter one of the other. It's one or the other. I change it every day.
Okay.
The tweet was, be crazy if they made rugby the World Cup, brackets 1991, on Atari into a real game, huh?
Oh, I did wonder what on earth you were talking about when you sent that tweet.
So, I was not talking about anything. I was, funnily enough, having a wee. I had left... So, you know, I think I got very lucky in that I left my good friend Katie Mitchell, who's a comedian and so on, at my laptop doing something while I went to the toilet. And I came back and she sent that tweet from the Squid Rugby account.
Fair enough.
But I think I got very lucky that normally when people do that, they leave, you know, a Twitter account with 50,000 followers open. Someone will do like the teenage boy, like, I'm pregnant or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, the usuals, the hits.
Yeah, yeah,
I think
yeah.
I got very lucky that instead it was someone who's won, like, awards for writing jokes. And is like, you know, there's probably some people who are very into the Midlands comedy scene going like, wait a minute, Squidge knows Katie Mitchell from the Midlands comedy circuit. So, yeah, so that, I'm over-explaining that now. Because, like, Jamie Wall and, you know, a number of friends of the pod, Graham Love also has been on this podcast, replied to it. And I was a bit like, wait a second, should I explain?
And now people are questioning how you know Jamie Wall and Graham Love. What a small world.
Yeah. I know. I know Jamie Wall because, I met him through Jamie Fence and Jamie Hedge. I really hate that I said that.
You're such
Hang on, what am I doing?
You know what? No. I'm gonna be calm right now, and
yes.
I'm just gonna. Microphones are switched off. You know, this is off air.
Cool.
I'm just gonna. We just need to talk about that because you can't really make jokes like that. Like, we have standards.
No,
and to put it to
do we?
Not really. But I just think you're a bit of a prick.
No, I know. But just a bit.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I think.
We're only 6 minutes in, right?
I want to apologize to my own family, except for you.
That's fine.
Very hurtful things about me.
Yeah. I just called you a prick, man. It's fair game.
But more than that, I want to apologize to not just Jamie's entire extended family.
Yeah.
But
and the Feds family.
All walls worldwide.
Okay. Like Walls ice cream.
Not Walls ice cream.
Okay.
And I intend, because it's spelt differently. And I intend
it's not.
To go. It's spelt differently. It's spelt WALLSICECREAMS. Wait a minute, that's ice creams. I scream, you scream, we all scream for Jamie Wall. What am I doing? I'm talking about.
So today,
I've taken 2 weeks away from rugby. I meant I've taken 2 weeks to go and have a complete psychological breakdown.
Well, now you've
taken. I don't know what's happened to me.
Now you've taken 2 weeks and 7 minutes away from rugby. And, and you know what?
So
we've taken a lot of dignity away from
rugby. I was intending for that to last about 40 seconds, right?
Yeah.
For me to go, I've been away from rugby for a bit. Watching this test back today.
The very first test.
The first test of the 2009 Lions Tour, one of the most famous series in the history of the sport.
Yeah.
One of the most acclaimed and celebrated periods the sport has ever had. The game that kicked that off.
Yeah.
Watching that back was the first time I've watched rugby in a few weeks. Like,
yeah.
I didn't watch that second. I watched the first test between Argentina and South Africa. I didn't watch the second.
Yeah.
And I haven't watched it back yet. All I've seen is the kind of amsterdam.
On an incredibly, like, basic, remove all analytical sort of thing. Basically, like, did you enjoy it, watching this back?
It's really good, this game.
Yeah.
It's a really good game.
Yeah.
And it made me wonder, like, is part of why I was burnt out on rugby because I haven't watched a properly good game since that Premiership final? Like, the Premiership final was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
That was, what, tail end of June.
Sure.
And since then, I've watched a lot of rugby, and all of it has been either uncompetitive or slow.
There is also the fact that, like, with the Lions Tour that we've just had in 2021, for anyone who's listening far in the future, because, you know, we have some listeners who are from the future. We certainly have none from the present. But anyway.
Jamie Invisible Wall.
Yeah, sure.
Spaceships.
Yeah.
Spaceship Wall.
Anyway, so with that Lions Tour that's gone on, I'm just gonna oversee that.
Myself.
Yeah, me neither. Anyway, with that Lions Tour that's just gone on, if I ever get to finish this point, you kind of have to watch it with a really analytical eye because so much weighs on it, and so being able to just watch back a rugby match just because you enjoy watching rugby can be quite a good thing to come over because they are two completely different things, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's very pronounced, the difference here.
Yeah.
And because this game has points of being like that second test this year.
Yeah.
Where South Africa are completely on top for large swathes.
Yeah.
But the entire way the Lions are doing things in attack and they keep looking like they might
Sure. The Lions really play their part in this test, to be fair. Like,
yeah.
It feels very one-sided, but at the same time, you know, the Lions couldn't have done much more with what they were given.
I got very sick during the Autumn Nations Cup and then during this Lions series as well, of people talking about how boring rugby's become.
Yeah, right? Yeah, I hate it.
And because it's never boring, right? The problem with this Lions series, and the reason it was not the spectacle that we were hoping it would be, was because the two teams played the same tactics, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that is going to be dull in whatever sport, whatever the tactics are. Right, like, sure. If two teams played really attacking dynamic rugby and were both set up to defend really attacking dynamic rugby,
yeah,
nothing would happen, right? Yeah. If two teams looked like... If one team was looking to play quick kicking rugby and one team that kind of like, say, like vintage All Blacks team where they counterattack all the time,
yeah,
right? Or any brand of rugby. It doesn't have to be kind of the brand Harlequins were playing. It could be quite easily like, you know, Wales under Gatland, which was not the brand of rugby the Lions played. The Lions were far more conservative than Wales ever were under Gatland.
Yeah.
Maybe actually 2019, but that's a slightly different thing. Even the brand of rugby the Lions were playing here in 2009, it would have been more interesting and dynamic, but we sort of just had, I think I described it as being an immovable force meeting another immovable force.
Mm-hmm.
And so that became a problem. Whereas 2009, it was two teams who had an idea of how they wanted to play, but lent on their plan B quite early. And
yeah.
South Africa's plan B was the Lions' plan A. And
sure.
The Lions' plan A was South Africa's plan B.
Yeah.
So you kind of had, they were always butting heads against each other.
Yeah.
Different ideas they were set up to play.
I think it's probably safe to say I enjoyed the 21-21 tour a little bit more than you did. Like, I didn't find it like mind-numbingly boring, like everyone else seems to have. But
I think that going
back over this 2009 series, it's definitely like those sets of test matches are kind of, even with, because this was our first Lions tour that we watched, you know, having watched 2013, 2017 and 2021 since then, when I think of like a proper Lions test series, this is always the one that comes to mind, because the intensity was just so through the roof, and it was just, all three tests were just such a spectacle.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Here we go. That was Satan escaping from me, and I'll now be completely normal and back to usual. He's got on my system. I apologise for burping into the microphone.
I can edit it out if you like.
Hey, no, that's an important moment. It's an important cultural artifact.
Okay, yeah. Rugby's so different.
Little known fact, when I was recording my voiceover for the video on the World Cup final, I burped just before getting into like the movement bit about Sia Khaleesi at the end.
Nice.
And I wish I saved the original take where I just left that in and started talking. Where I did a real switch. It was like watching Julianne Moore at her best. Or, you know, any of the performers from Cruising New Age. So, should we look at the teams for this particular match of rugby?
That would be an idea. Let's start with the box, so, why don't we?
Yeah, so South Africa had only played one game coming in. The Lions had obviously played six warm-up games.
Yeah.
And led into this off the back of a regular European season as well. South Africa had played one game against Namibia, who they battered, and then they kind of just had to try and fill the time until there.
Sure.
So, again, there's quite a few changes from the team that won the World Cup 2 years earlier, unlike, obviously, this year, where they pretty much copy and paste the same team in.
Sure.
You've got the... Okay, so looking at this back line, right, I remember that Ruben Pienaar was their 10, and there was a lot of debate at the time over whether they go with Ruben Pienaar, who had established himself as the 10 in 2008 after... Obviously, Brock James had disappeared off to Bath.
And just before he'd gone to Ulster and decided he wanted to be a scrum half full time. And he at this point, Ruan Pienaar could play literally any position in the back line, you know. And probably, you know, 10 probably was the position he was most competent in at this point, because
his boot was
unreal. And he's just like, he had temperament like no other player in World Rugby.
He was playing 10 in Super Rugby level at this point.
Mm-hmm.
He played fullback for the Springboks in the Rugby Championship that year, the Tri Nations, as it was there.
Yeah.
As you say, he was just playing anywhere, and he then left because, he was the Springbok starting 10.
Yeah.
You know, or at least he was on the bet. He was in the team as a 10, as a fullback.
Yeah.
He then went to Ulster because they were the only club that promised him he played 9.
Yeah.
He had a number of offers from other clubs, and all of them wanted to play him as a 10 fullback. You know, who can cover.
Now him. I look back at Pienaar and just think, like, 9 was his position. And I mean, we had Gareth Mason on the pod quite a long time ago, who is, you know, a diehard Springboks fan. And he was obviously shocked to hear us referring to Ruben Pienaar as like an all-time great, like a proper like legend of the professional game and a worldie, basically. And they kind of said that he kind of said that the message didn't really get back to South Africa of him being that good. It was kind of like, well, he was a good player, you know, he played to a good standard at test match level, but didn't think he was like a world-class player. But like, when he played for Ulster, it was always that thing. He'd start at 9, then move to 10 at the end of the game and just tear teams to shreds.
Yeah. So it was a choice at this point between Ruben Pienaar, who established himself in the year beforehand and was far more of a kind of attacking 10 and all-rounded 10, which is obviously at odds with the 9 he became. But,
sure. Yeah, it is.
And then the far more conservative Mornay Steyn, who was in incredibly great form for Super Rugby that year. The Bulls won Super Rugby that year. You know, he was the key man. He was the top point scorer in Super Rugby. He was the guy, right?
Yeah.
He was uncapped, however. And people didn't know if he'd have the temperament to immediately step up into Test rugby. And we'll get on to his first few touches, but there are a few odd moments when Miles Harrison on commentary describes him as the young man.
That's so weird. I was about to bring that up. He says that, oh yeah, young Steyn puts it in the air. It's like, don't call him young. He looks no younger than he does like a few days ago when he knocked over that winning penalty in 2021 against the Lions. And it's like, that man hasn't aged. He's not young. He's always been 30. And he's got like the temperament of like, oh man. Oh.
I really can't wait for Mornay Steyn's son to start playing for the Springboks for the next Lions tour and kick the winner, obviously. Apparently he's able to kick goals from like 35 metres already and he's 10.
Don't. Let me enjoy the time where we haven't been knocked out three times by the Steyns.
That's coming. And I reckon Mornay Steyn's son will also only be young for about 6 months.
Yeah.
Like, Mornay Steyn was... it was literally just this test series where Mornay Steyn was a young player, right?
Yeah.
By the Tri Nations, he was on the bench the first game of the Tri Nations, then came in for the second.
He played like he had 30 caps.
From there onwards, from his fourth cap onwards, he was it. You know, he was the established 30-plus cap international.
International rugby was nothing to him. Like, it was just so easy to conquer. He was world-class within about 6 minutes of playing international rugby.
Ball to water.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Mornay Steyn was left on the bench for this game, does come on for his first cap. For some reason, he's wearing 22 and Jacques Frees in 21.
Yeah, that's a weird one, isn't it? So I think probably the most important selection is that they opted with both Bismarck Duplessis and John Schmidt. So John Schmidt plays on the tight head. Obviously, the debate was always that these are basically the two best hookers in the world. Duplessis is slightly better, is probably the consensus among Springbok fans at this point, but John Schmidt is also probably the best captain in the world. So it's a great problem to have. Luckily, Schmidt will learned to play on the tight head, and I think it went pretty well.
They'd moved Smith over to, he'd obviously been, you know, hook all the way through his career. He'd played prop a bit as a teenager. He was then moved to prop for the autumn series the year before. So his first start at prop was against Wales in the autumn 2008.
Right. Yeah.
And then he also played there against Scotland and then moved back to hooker against England. So he had
what a player, man,
as a prop going like, into this.
And it's bold to that selection. It's incredibly bold, right, to go for that against, you know, I mean, Gethin Jenkins and Phil Vickery. I mean, we'll come on to how the scrum went, but it's no mean feat coming up against them and thinking, yeah, all right, we can put a hooker in at tight head. And also just like fair play to him stepping up and just like being willing to swap his position so Bismarck could come into the team.
Yeah. It was mad. Looking back on it, it's an insane thing to do.
It is,
to move your captain across to tight head.
Yeah.
Maybe the most difficult position on the field to learn.
Yeah, yeah. Right? Like, so pressurised.
And as things that happen in this game go on to show, right, good tight heads have been playing there since they were at most 9.
Yeah.
Right? Like, from the moment there are contested scrums, they're playing tight head, the best tight heads.
Yeah.
And it normally takes them up until they're about 26, 27
100%.
To be good enough to play at international level, right? Yeah. John Schmidt got there in three games. It took John Schmidt 3 games
he just cracked it.
To get there. And he obviously played there during Super Rugby.
Yeah.
So
it's not quite the same though, is it? Like, yeah.
No.
And also, speaking of the thing we were saying about Mornay Steyn, this being Heinrich Brosseau's second cap, and like...
Is there any second cap?
Yeah. And it was like, oh yeah, international rugby, yeah, that's easy. You know? Like, he was straight in and just completely dominant, like, wherever he could be. So, yeah, anyway, so they had A.D. Jacobs partnered John de Villiers in the centres, which was a bit of a shock for me. Like, you know, I kind of thought, oh, yeah, Jacques Frees felt like the starting centre for a long time. I suppose he sort of, you know, has been sort of around this tour. But that feels like a strange selection to me, Jacobs ahead of Free.
For a lot, it's something that Fury and de Villiers didn't actually start that many games together. To say you think of them as iconic combos.
Yeah, yeah, you do.
But I remember looking at the list of players who started the most test matches together, and I expect them to just be on there.
Yeah,
one,
yeah.
One of the most caps.
You put them up there with like Nono and Smith and stuff like that, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. O'Driscoll and...
Darcy. Yeah.
And, you know, even Foxy and Roberts.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you don't... They're just not there. They didn't actually play together that much. Jacques Frew uses an impact sub very much.
Right, okay.
And obviously, both of them won a lot of caps.
Yeah.
But there wasn't that much in the way of starts together.
Yeah.
Which is unusual. They both won, 70, 80-odd caps. I think, John DeVille's hit 100, didn't he? Did he?
I think he must have.
I forgot everything I know about rugby.
Yeah.
He did 109 caps. Okay, yeah. But yeah, AD Jacobs felt like a surprise, even though obviously he'd been around for longer at this point.
Yeah,
and so on.
Yeah. No, he's
just
still a player. Sort,
maybe because Fourie scores the winner in the following test. Spoilers.
Sure. Yeah. Should we look at the Lions team?
Let's look
so,
at the Lions team.
So, obviously any Lions team will always have controversy in it, you know, and like, it's a big call, you know, like, Stephen Jones being the fly half over Aaron Nogara after Nogara won the Grand Slam and was this impeccable kicker. But Stephen Jones has seemed to have much more of an all-round game. You know, Ugo Monya on the wing, who had been on fire in the warm-up games. Him and Bo had worked brilliantly together. Monya was the top try scorer on tour, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Lee Byrne ahead of Rob Carney at fullback.
So Lee Byrne, I think, was seen as one of the really nailed-on selections.
Yeah, played very
the
well.
The two really...
two very good fullback options. Yeah.
Written themselves in as they were guaranteed, they were nailed on.
Yeah.
I remember the BBC headline when the team was announced being David Wallace starts, because they very much had it as like him and Martin Williams were, the bookies were completely undecided as to who would be the
player.
Whereas Monya started over Shane Williams, who was the World Player of the Year at the time, but had not played very well in the warm-up games. Monya had played very well
he
in
was
the
excellent.
Games.
He was on really, really good form.
Yeah. And look, Shane Williams was also due to be on Strictly this year, but Monya stole that spot from him as well.
Yeah.
And also, you know, like, can you imagine Shane Williams on Question of Sport?
I could imagine him on Strictly doing a little bit better than Question of Sport.
Like, Ugo Monya, for anyone unaware, any South African or elsewhere listeners, there's a long-running BBC panel game where they always have sports people as captains. Matt Dawson has been a captain for a very
sports
long time.
Sports quiz show, yeah.
Yeah.
Along with cricketer Phil Tufnell.
Yeah, and Ugo Monya's just been named. He's due to start as a new team captain on there in, you know...
I'm very excited to see.
A few months' time, I think, in November.
Yeah.
But Shane Williams, right, is a... Shane Williams is so boring a pundit that during the last weekend of the Six Nations, instead of covering one of the Six Nations games, instead of even covering the biggest club game going on that weekend, he was covering the Dragons' bottom-of-the-table game against Zebra. Like, that's... That's where Shane Williams is down to. Anyway,
the good news is he was a very exciting tangent. Player.
He was a phenomenal rugby player. He was trying too hard on this tour, and Ugo Monya started over him.
Yeah,
and we'll get into Ugo Monya as we go. But yeah, that was sort of the two big surprises.
Yeah,
Alan Wynne-Jones also starts his first Lions test.
Yes,
first many. Of a run of 12 unbroken
mental
tests.
Yeah. Okay, should we go on? Go on.
No. I want to mention one more thing, because during the second half, they cut to the Lions bench. Sat there together, and still in his bib was Harry Ellis.
Oh yeah, just there for the ride, isn't he?
Harry Ellis in a Test Match Lions squad.
Just vibing, man.
Yeah, it's just a good time, isn't it? Just great vibes.
Harry Ellis, man.
Harry Ellis, yeah.
He got on in a third Test, didn't he? I believe.
Yeah. No, he did. And they moved Mike Phillips into the centre.
Yeah. Oh, man, so many spoilers. Love this podcast. Anyway, should we start watching the game?
Yeah. I mean, so the game, I think, starts pretty much as, from a Lions point of view, starts as they mean to go on.
Yeah.
In that they kick it straight to Brian O'Driscoll, and Brian O'Driscoll does something brilliant.
Brian O'Driscoll's put under loads and loads of pressure by Jean de Villiers, who is just one of the hardest hitters in the world of rugby. And Brian O'Driscoll just kind of goes, oh, this ball thing? Yeah, how about you're 22, suck it. And then he just boots it miles. And it's great, because O'Driscoll is viewed as one of the greatest centers of all time. But kicking was one of those things that he was very good at, but people kind of underappreciated. And he kicked that ball well.
It's a very good and very long kick, crucially, as well.
It's a great start.
Kicking, and you think of little chips and grubbers and
yeah.
stuff.
it really relieves the pressure.
And the drop goal in Heineken Cup final a few weeks before this. Yeah. You don't necessarily think of a massive clearance out of his own 22.
Sure.
That bounces, you know, bounces into touch 70 odd metres out.
Yeah.
Really, really good kick. And yeah, as they say, starts the mean to go on, right? Brian O'Driscoll, what a rugby player.
He's fucking good, isn't he?
I say, I've forgotten everything I knew about rugby in the last few weeks. So how good Brian O'Driscoll was came as a surprise to me.
I know what you mean. Like, he could do literally everything,
unbelievable.
Man.
Unbelievable!
I do love, we'll come on to it, but there's a point in the second half when the Lions look a little bit lost. And naturally, it's clearly unspoken, but the Orgies decide we're just going to keep giving it to Bod. And every time he does something fucking absolutely spellbinding every time he touches the ball.
So Brian O'Driscoll, right, okay. This is a Lions test match, right? Mm-hmm. That is the second highest tier intensity you can play rugby. That's the second highest level of rugby anywhere. You're going right down from like casual touch rugby, like a chuckabout of kids, right?
Yeah.
Right up to, it's the second highest tier to a World Cup final.
Yeah, which, right? As an Irishman, Brian O'Driscoll has never got to.
Wait a minute. Surely he must play in the semi-final at least.
No. Just quarters, mate. Just quarters. And he usually loses.
That seems like Harry Ellis type vibes. So, this is the second highest tier any rugby player can ever play at, right? It is the highest tier O'Driscoll could ever play at, right? Watching Brian O'Driscoll in this game reminds me of watching Ma Nonu playing MLR.
yeah, that was pretty great. Oh, man. Come back to the Legion. Like, if you're listening, come back to the San Diego Legion.
For anyone that didn't catch Ma Nonu during his, what was it, like five games for...
Not even. I think he played three games, maybe.
But Nonu was so good that the players around him couldn't keep up.
Yeah.
So he was often going for, he was often like spotting chips and grubbers and like cross kicks and openings in the defence and so on, and throwing balls to people, and the other players couldn't recognise it was a try.
And that's it. Like sometimes, like for example, he would call to his 10, like, oh, the space in behind, you know, chip it, and like the 10 physically didn't, like, wasn't good enough to be able to like hear the call and do it in the time Nonu was used to. Like, having played it outside Dan Carter and, you know, whatever other tens, like Bowden Barrett and whoever else for the last 10 years.
But there were points in which he would spot an obvious cross kick and he just put it in, you know, like,
yeah,
perfect.
Yeah.
And the winger wouldn't have noticed there was no one opposite.
Yeah.
You know, it's that kind of thing of just, like, being, of no one being on a shock
like,
wave
playing,
him.
Playing at jogging pace.
Yeah. Brian O'Driscoll felt like that in a Lions test.
Yeah.
Like, every touch he had, he seemed to be so far beyond the other 29 players on the field.
Yeah. I genuinely think he didn't really put a foot wrong much in this game, which is mental to think the insane amount of pressure he was under all game. And, like, you know, De Villiers and Jacobs both had good games. And to come out of that still looking world-class like he did was just unbelievable. So, yeah, anyway, he puts that kick in.
Yeah.
Straight from the lineup afterwards, Foro Dupre puts a box kick in the air, JP Peterson is offside, and Stephen Jones goes for a penalty.
Mm.
He misses the penalty. Francois Steyn catches the ball in goal.
To add, was like 45, 47 metres out on the angle,
corner,
right in the corner.
Yeah.
Like, really difficult.
Kick, very
difficult. Never had the greatest range.
I think it was a bit of a tester, you know, a couple of minutes into the test match.
Yeah.
And, you know, he missed it. Franz Steyn catches the ball in goal. Instead of putting it down for the 22, he runs it out and boots the ball to about 60, 70 metres to near the Lions 22. I also realised at this point that I've watched the first 5 minutes of this game back about six times because I did a project when I was in year 12 in college on sports commentary, and this was the example I used was the start of this test. So I then realised that I've heard that commentary from Stuart Barnes about Francois Steyn running the ball out of his 22 like a lot of times. So yeah, there's a thing. But then I reached a point where I kind of thought, oh wait, yeah, I don't recognise this bit now, so this is good.
I did the trailer for How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, which is a rom-com starring Matthew McConaughey and Kate Hudson that I've never seen.
And not written by Stuart Barnes, crucially.
No. It might have been, actually. I don't know. I haven't seen it. Hold on, I'll just Google. Did Stuart Barnes brackets rugby player from Bath write the romantic comedy How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days? There we go. Okay. It says Stuart Barnes is a former international rugby... Okay, it tells me Stuart Barnes is 10 rugby hard men of all time.
I'm under the impression
that
he
makes
didn't.
A list with Gareth Chilcott as the hardest man in the history of rugby says to me he did not write a rom-com.
Yeah, okay. I don't think he did. But thank you for checking. I appreciate that. We're suckers for accuracy on this, you know. Nice little TMO check you did there.
Yes.
So
speaking of TMO checks,
should we skip ahead?
Let's skip ahead, right? So, okay. So one of the things that defines this year's Lions series, the 2012. What year is it?
2021.
I haven't paying attention to anything for 2 weeks. 2021.
For 9 years, maybe.
Same as it was two weeks ago.
2 years ago. It was not.
I thought Satan went away in that burp. So, one of the things that defined it, right, was refereeing controversy.
Yeah.
Okay? One of the things that...
Remembered what we're about to address. Carry on.
One of the things that really defined South African rugby and talking about refereeing in the last few years was the one and only Mr. Bryce Lawrence.
Yes.
Okay? This game... in 2009, was refereed by Bryce Lawrence.
2 years prior to the Australia-South Africa one that you referred to, where Bryce Lawrence was effectively chased out of his refereeing career by South Africans who weren't happy with that performance. You know, we went over this in the 2011 podcast. If anyone wants to listen to that.
Yeah, it's worth listening back to. We went into some detail on that, and I feel like we were fairly fair.
I think we did a good job of that.
I think so. I'd like I think we need two people to go back over that in 11 years and tell us whether we did a good job on that, really. the Squid Rugby World Cup retrospective from 12 years in the future. So, I think that Bryce Lawrence has a really bizarre game in this performance. And I think there's an argument to be made that Warren Gatland could have made an hour-long video on this. but I mean, there's a few moments that we kind of will get through as we go through the game naturally. But the real standout is an interaction with the TMO Christophe Burdos.
Oh man, Burdos is so clueless. I love it.
Christophe Burdos, right, has at this point refereed quite a number of tests. In English at test level.
He was a high level referee. Okay? Yeah.
You may be wondering why I said in English. Because we get to the Uga Monya has the ball held up over the try line. Okay. Yeah. Lions have a bit of an overlap. They work it out. Monya goes over in the corner.
Yeah. JP Peterson puts a good hit on him, and John de Villiers flies in and he effectively holds him up originally, strips the ball, and it goes into touch, right? Touching goal.
Yeah. Yeah. And
spoilers.
Actually, should we just play the clip back?
Yeah, if you've got it.
It's a very big call giving a try when there's so much debate. If that's not a try, that is a wonderful piece of defensive play.
Nice. Yeah.
I have a decision.
Thank you.
The ball was not touching goal. The ball was not touching goal.
It's a fair call from Christophe Burdos.
It was a touching goal here.
Doesn't touch in goal.
Sorry?
The ball doesn't touch in goal.
Okay, but it's carried in by Red.
Yeah, scrum 5 red.
Why scrum 5 red though?
Because the green player played the ball after and go in that deadline.
The green player played the ball or an in goal?
Yeah, it's a scrum 5 red.
Why though?
Attacking scrum.
What?
You
need to tell me why it's a scrum 5.
Because the green player on the floor played the ball
in the field of play or in an in goal?
No, it was in goal.
Okay, it's a 22 then.
Bryce Lawrence knows
it. I just love the point where Bryce Lawrence. Okay, shut the fuck up.
I'm going with my decision. I'm not listening to you at all.
Because watching this back, firstly he goes, it was not touching goal. And then Bryce Lawrence just kind of goes, what do you mean? That's not why I asked. Like, what are you on about? And he keeps going, It was not touch and goal. And then after a while, also my French accent was wild there. And then eventually, after he's tried, it's like, what do you mean? What do you mean? And he goes, it was touch and goal. And and then he's just kind of going for ages, like, so, what do you mean? What is it? It's like, it's a 5 meter scrum. It's like, why is it? Like, and no, nothing in the rules should ever mean that that is going to be a 5 meter scrum.
If no, I figured he was saying it's held up.
Oh, because he's saying it's not touching goal.
What I figured Burdos was saying was he was going, by touching goal, he means touchdown on the goal line. And he was saying it's not touchdown, attacking scrum.
God, the phrase right? touching goal is inconvenient, isn't it?
Yeah, and I just think he's heard that buzz phrase somewhere in English and he doesn't quite know what it means.
I just love that point where Bryce Lawrence is kind of looking down on him at this point and going, well, if it's touching goal, is it 22? Like, that's just not
Burdos
the
rule. Like, Lawrence's communication with him, it's like, you know, they've probably met beforehand and, you know, probably met on a refereeing course and so on around, right? But over the course of that conversation, over the course of that TMOing decision, I think Bryce Lawrence decides he's being TMO'd by Mr. Bean.
Yes!
Like, and you can sort of see in his face the frustration seep in and start to go like, my TMO is an idiot!
What are you talking about?
He can't speak English! And he then, the entire game, avoids going to TMO whenever he can.
Yeah. There's like one other intervention, right? Where Burdos kind of chirps
in and just... another one with Ugo Monya.
Yes.
And like, there's one with Mike Phillips where he doesn't go, and there's a few like where he doesn't go up. And obviously, you know, the TMO laws were stricter then, you couldn't go for foul play and so on.
And you couldn't just look at the screen, really, right? You had to actually talk to the TMO. Yeah. So,
and like, he also, when there is one that the Lions given as a knock on, Mike Phillips goes for it. Doesn't grab it. And he right away, when he says, it is lost, and he's like, okay, scrum, right? Scrum green. And he doesn't give him any time to communicate. He cuts him off right away before he goes, true, down the line.
Honestly, so glad Bryce Lawrence just went, yeah, it's a 22. Like, come on. Like, we've been over this.
I wanted
learn
that
to learn it.
It was like a scene in the Ricky Gervais program.
Yeah.
Like, it felt like it was The Office or something.
Yeah. I feel like Ricky Gervais is playing Christoph Burdos at this point. Lawrence was entirely right to overrule him, because I had no idea what Burdos was trying to communicate. But, yeah, anyway, 22 was given.
I mean, my take on that, right, is nowadays, anyway, it'd be a penalty try.
Yeah, JP Peterson, like, John de Villiers rips the ball really well. JP Peterson rips Ugo Monya's head off.
Like, that is not a tackle so much as a guillotining.
Yeah.
Like, you think you're in, like, 17th century France
looking
at it. He just grabs him by the throat and throws him.
Yeah.
And again, you take Peterson out there and Monya is walking it in and touching it down.
Yeah.
It's a really easy try.
Yeah.
But as it is, you know, Peterson gets enough of a shot on him that de Villiers can get under the ball.
Yeah.
And then, not touching goal.
And like, you know, there's a similar thing in the Lions half where Tom Croft like blatantly shoulder charges Fory Dupria, and it's mental that there's no yellow cards given in this game at any point.
That was
definitely a high tackle.
Speaking of Tom Croft, should we talk about the first try?
A few minutes in,
The Lions, Lee Byrne has generally a really good first half before he goes off half time. But there's one moment where the backfield's left completely open. And South Africa really...
Pienaar kind of takes the mick out of them a little bit with this kick.
Yeah. It's a really good kind of like deep cross kick. One of those that's like landing...
Provocative.
Next to the corner flag.
I think is the word.
Yes. And it kind of sits up there and JP Peterson's almost on it. And
kind of falls through his legs
really
a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
And three men fall to the floor. So there's Monya, there's Byrne, there's Peterson, all kind of scramble for the ball and all kind of end up taking each other out. So the ball comes loose.
Yeah.
AD Jacobs goes to try and ground it and somehow just can't. I can't quite figure that out.
Happens. I wish Christoph Burdos could tell us.
Yeah. But I think what happens is the ball is trapped between Ugo Monya's legs because it's not a ruck or anything. He doesn't legally have to make the ball presentable or available. So I think he kind of like uses his thighs to be really inconvenient to Jacobs, and Jacobs just can't quite get hold of the ball in time before the Lions get back to scramble and stop him from grounding it. But off the back of this, the Springboks rewarded a scrum 5 metres out from the try line.
Yes.
A scrum 5, green ball.
Yes. This is the first scrum of the game.
Yeah.
And is, I think, the only one Phil Vickery manages to hold up.
Yeah.
So this scrum is pretty even, pretty level.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Ruben Pienaar then crash balls himself.
Yeah,
which you know
effectively.
Like crash ball
10. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Really good crash ball as well. Like it is like watching Andre Pollard being invented before your eyes. But then, right, second phase, next phase round. So they then run another phase.
Brousseau carries in.
It's Brousseau, yeah. Between Roberts and O'Driscoll, Roberts is involved in the tackle. Yes, he gets it really quickly, sets him into position, right? David Wallace comes around the corner as the guard. Tom Croft just sort of goes for a walk. Like, I think he goes out for this little dawdle, thinking this is a nice patch of grass, you know, lots of people around. Realizes he's forgotten his dock, starts to turn back to go and, you know, because he's holding the lead anyway. And then John Smith flies past him and scores a try.
So John Smith... You know, he runs very hard. I do think there's a questionable tackle attempt by Jamie Roberts as well, but in fairness, he had just gotten up from making another one.
Roberts has just got up from making a tackle, and he's trying to cover, like, 8 or 9
meters. Yeah.
Like, he's covering inside and outside him, and Croft is nowhere to be seen.
It's
Croft
just
be folding into the gap.
It's a powerful run for the line by John Smith, and I think he takes the try very
well. Really well-timed line.
And you know what? It's one of those things that the Springboks play at tempo with big men. You know, and it's one of those things that's really difficult to defend when you're constantly coming around the corner and thinking, right, there's nothing more tiring in a game of rugby than making tackle after tackle, is there? So be on the move and make loads of tackles was such a difficult thing for the Lions to contain. And John Smith scoring that try, you know, it was very much a system-led try. It was very much a team-led try. He happened to be the person latching onto it at the end and crashing over.
Mm. So, yeah, I think Tom Croft remembered in this game for scoring 2 tries, right? Which we'll get onto, obviously. But beyond that, he is completely anonymous. I noticed this 3 times. You know how, like, Tom Croft is often cited as, like, the first edge forward, right?
Yeah.
You know, like, he was, like, the invention of that. Well, no, sure. Something that's always happened is the kind of wing forward and so on, but, like, in the modern game...
I know what you
Tom
mean,
Croft
though.
Tom Croft is often used on the wing. And
in terms of, like, big left boot, runs quite fast, you know, he's kind of like a winger, but he's also kind of like a second row.
He works in that role that, like, Faletau and so on are often used in now, because he's a toy... where they're kind of in between the 13 and wing channel. You know, and he was used there a lot by Leicester and then by the Lions as well.
Yeah.
They shouldn't be using there in defence, though.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
like 3 times you just see him stood on the wing in defence. And your flanker, maybe I'm old-fashioned, but I'd have thought your flanker should be somewhere making tackles.
Yeah. It's a funny one, that. But, you know, you think, oh, yeah, the Lions will learn from this, you know. They go 7-0 down, and then straight afterwards, there's the whole Monya thing. And then scrums start to happen, Robbie. Scrums exist in a game of rugby. And
you notice this on the Monya chance comes straight off the back of a scrum.
Yeah.
And really, the space opens up because South Africa go for that full 8-man shove.
Yeah, they're all...
And you can see, by the time the ball comes out, Phil Vickery is like back in Cornwall.
He's
been driven way off the ball. And the Lions are lucky the Lions had it called, they were going to have a quick ball out of the scrum for this move. They are really lucky that was the case, because otherwise they are losing that ball.
Yeah. Like, the reason why Monya had the space on the edge was because I think 14 of the South African team were all just pummeling Phil Vickery on the floor.
Yeah. Also, everyone buys Jamie Roberts' dummy line.
And is it Stephen Jones or O'Driscoll does the miss pass?
O'Driscoll.
Oh, God, he could pick out a miss pass, couldn't he?
He was so good. Yeah. Then get to the next scrum, and having, again, almost driven the Lions off their own ball, South Africa go, should we actually do it this time, lads?
Vickery levitates, man.
Yeah. Wingardium Leviosa.
That first scrum, I kind of thought, like, oh, okay, this is quite interesting, because Smith's, like, dominated Gethin Jenkins here, you know, this is quite interesting. Mm. Then you see it on the reverse angle, and you go, oh, wait, I mean, he does, don't get me wrong, like, he does dominate Gethin Jenkins, but a lot of this is that the Beast has just picked up Phil Vickery and taken him for a walk, you know. On the Dobmaster thing you did recently, Lee from Blood and Mud, who've had on the podcast before, did a very, very good summing, a recreation of Phil Vickery that day. I would highly recommend going and watching that, if you haven't already.
Yes. It's well worth finding, if only to see his steak tenderizing mallet.
Yes.
The Lions... Okay, this is just of completed scrums. Mm-hmm. So, right, not including ones where the ball didn't get in, right? The Lions lost 4 completed scrums against the head.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow. That's
against the head.
You know what the most surprising thing is? I thought it was more.
So there'll also be a handful of scrums. I think there were 2 scrums where they lost it before the ball went in.
Yeah.
And every scrum must have its own ball, pretty much.
Yeah.
they're then winning.
Yeah, yeah.
Against the Hedge. And it's probably the stats are boosted by, you know, what happens just after half time. But this first half in particular, all of those scrums in the first half, right?
Yeah.
I believe there were 7 scrums in the first half, Lions scrums in the first half. And 4 of them they lose against the Hens.
My God, that's mental. And, you know, there's one of them, it's just before the ball comes in. And Lawrence has clearly already got it in his head. Like, Vickery doesn't have a leg to stand on here. And rightly so, he's getting dominated. He's giving away penalties all the time. Naturally, the referee's going to look at that and think, you know, there's only one way this penalty's going, even before the ball comes in. I think that was probably quite telling of how good it was going for the Beast, you know. And PNR kicks it over and they're 10-0 up only 10 minutes into the game. We've been talking for 45 minutes, we're 10 minutes into the game. but a lot of it...
We do get a moment just after this, though, on the prop front, right? South Africa, in their own half, they have a bit of an overlap after trying to... You know, it's one of those where they look to kick, and they're like, wait a second, we've got a massive overlap. We've got this guy called Brian Habana out there. Brian Habana looks up and he sees only a prop in front of him. And for some reason, this prop is showing him the outside. Like, go on, take me if you can.
And I love Ugo Moni just going Habana, like, yeah, you can have him.
Brian Habana, having been World Cup winner, top scorer in the last World Cup, former World Player of the Year, the best player in Rugby 08.
Most importantly.
Everything you could possibly say about Brian Habana, right, says Brian Habana should beat this prop. However, once you fill in that prop is Geffen Jenkins, you know Habana hasn't got a chance.
Yeah.
Geffen shows him the outside, then hunts him down and takes him out.
Easy.
Incredible.
Yeah. He sides him down and then Ugo Monyu wins a breakdown turnover off the back of it. And he gets a penalty of it.
It's my second favourite Geffen Jenkins tackle to his one on Zach Guildford in, I think, 2009, where he chased back from like the 13 channel. Guildford was on the end of an overlap and Geffen chases him back and takes him out. Like he probably does like a winger's chase back on the angle on a wing.
Nice, yeah.
It's terrific. So he does this on Habana.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
There's a point...
I think Rhiannon Garth-Jones, friend of the pod, burst.
Yeah. So there's another great point where South Africa dropped the ball, knock-on is given, scrum to the Lions, and Phil Vickery sighs. You can literally see him sighing. He doesn't want a put into his own scrum because he's that terrified of the Beast just atomizing him.
Phil Vickery seems like such a good lad.
Yeah,
He's such a genuinely nice guy.
Yeah.
And he's won MasterChef.
Yeah. And was a great player. You know, this podcast won't do credit to how great a player Phil Vickery was. You know, we won't do him justice here. But he was like a world-class player for a very long time. And props to the Beast.
Yeah, literal props.
Nice.
Props eaten by him.
Yeah.
Phil Vickery, you know, was a World Cup winner, captained England how many ever times, you know, 180 caps, you know, captained Gloucester for how many ever years, captained Wasps for how many ever years, played in Premiership finals, you know, did it all, right? He is remembered for two things, winning MasterChef and getting eaten by the Beast.
Hey, he did win a World Cup as well.
Yeah, that's like, but... When you say Phil Vickery's name, more people think of him winning MasterChef and this Lions game.
A very well accomplished man.
Than winning the World Cup. Yeah.
I like Phil Vickery. I've got written in my notes at some point.
Why not go to Raging Bull Clothes and buy his hats?
Yeah.
He now sells hats. What a front row you've got here. What does Geffen Jenkins sell now? He's a DJ and a coach.
Yeah, I guess so. He sells valuable advice.
Yes. But, so you've got... You've got a full party, I think, here. Right?
Well, you've got a MasterChef and a crisp salesman.
This front row. Yeah. So you've got a MasterChef who sells hats and shorts now. You've got a man who sells everything you need for a buffet, providing all your guests only eat crisps, which is a recommended diet.
Yeah.
And then you've got an incredibly talented but grumpy DJ in Gavin Jenkins.
Yeah.
You've
That's
got
a
perfect
party. Balance.
Look. I've never been to a party, but that's what I imagine they're like.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And hey, I would go to a party hosted by those three.
I would hope to be invited and inevitably not be invited to a party run by those three.
Yeah, I guess so. I've got written down in my notes at some point here, Lions opt for scrum and get fucking murdered.
Yeah, it was dumb, wasn't it?
Yeah. I don't know why at any point in the game they would opt for a scrum, but, you know.
around there as well, Foy Dupria goes to kick the ball and misses it.
Yes, so that's the one where Tom Croft shoulder barges him. And yeah, I find that a really iconic moment, because Foy Dupria, clearly, it's a quite speculative kick he goes for, but clearly he doesn't care if he drops the ball, because he knows the beast's going to win it back for him.
Yes. Yeah. He knows it's fine. Automatic possession.
And guess what? When he drops the ball, guess what happens? The beast
winning back for him.
Wins it back for him. Gets a penalty. Franz Ostein kicks it. They go 13-0 up. Like, they gained 3 points from Foy Dupria dropping that ball.
It's still funny to watch one of the greatest players of all time be unable to complete a skill that I know I can. Just this, I love those moments.
Yeah. I love dropping the ball. It's my favourite thing to do on a rugby pitch. Anyone who's played with or against me will know that that's my true passion in rugby.
Yes. They also keep, all throughout this first half, cutting to Sean Edwards a lot.
Yeah, they do, don't they? And just waiting for him to get visibly angry, which happens a couple of times.
Just showing him being quite frustrated. Yeah. Because he's sat near the touchline, doesn't have his book of poetry with him.
Yeah.
Which, for anyone that doesn't know Sean Edwards inside out, Sean Edwards is a diehard Christian, you know, like really, really orthodox, and carries a book of poetry to games with him and has it with him at all times to calm him down.
Yeah.
So that if ever he's getting too angry with the game, he can read a poem back and calm himself down, which is magnificent.
Yeah.
And really, he should have Andy Fowler's book of poems, which includes the poem The Hurt Arena.
Yeah, yeah. Or maybe some of Mauro Itoje's poetry, but then it'll probably make him more angry.
Yes. There's no way Sean Edwards enjoy Mauro Itoje's poetry.
No. Should we talk about the next try?
Yes.
So,
there's a few moments that the Lions attack in this first half that are genuinely very good.
Yes.
Right? And there are things they're doing in attack that would work today.
Yeah. Like that tip-on ball where David Wallace goes through.
I was about to mention that. Yeah. Where they have basically five players running the same flat line, but staggered, so that Phillips could hit any of them from nine.
Yeah.
And then if they instead went to Stephen Jones, he could have hit any of the other four.
Yeah.
And instead, it goes to Lee Mears, and he flicks it on like it's a Pringle to David Wallace, who goes
that
right
pass cost David Wallace 11p.
Yes. It's really good, and that would work nowadays, and it's something we've seen France run something similar under in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
You know, just like giving DuPont as many options as possible.
Sure.
But I don't think it's as crisp, no pun intended.
Nowhere near.
That is for the Lions.
That's good.
So it's really promising, and there's a few bits that where they really, really build, and they look like they're going somewhere.
Yeah. So there's a phase where Stephen Jones has Jamie Roberts and Brian O'Driscoll outside him, and he runs a really nice wraparound move. And this is a move that's been in the game for such a long time, but it's always going to be effective, I think. You know, if you ask Johnny Sexton, then definitely. But because of the way it's evolved, in that Stephen Jones runs around Jamie Roberts to run this wrap, and then Roberts obviously has the option to either hit O'Driscoll or give it to Stephen Jones in the boot. And, you know, it's quite a hard thing to defend because you've got three players to defend. And Jamie Roberts then just decides he's just going to run hard. And then he's got O'Driscoll to run the perfect line to go straight through the gap, steps the fullback, offloads to Tom Croft. It's just a technically perfect try because it's just like Stephen Jones runs the right line on that loop, which just gives Roberts the right time to feed O'Driscoll. And O'Driscoll's line of running and his balance on the run is so, so sublime.
It's really good. And I think it's a banner on that wing out wide who does a... It's one of these skills, right? It's one of these things that's unappreciated in rugby. How good a job Habana does at blocking O'Driscoll's passing options, right?
Yeah.
The Lions have two men spare. Habana manages to position his body so that he can't get it to either Bo or Byrne,
who are both
running good support lines.
And two world-class finishes at the time as well, you know?
So O'Driscoll doesn't stick to his pre-arranged idea, doesn't stick to the move as they would have called it, as they would have expected it to go. And instead improvises, tries to cut back inside, eats up all the space himself, and just waits for support to appear around him. And I watched every angle back, and I can't find out how Tom Croft appears there. Because literally, the camera...
In theory, you should be able to.
And Croft is just there, suddenly, on every single angle.
Yeah.
And he also has to stop still. Like, I think Croft sort of is beginning to overrun it, and then stops himself.
Yeah, he does. He definitely does, yeah. But, you know, credit to him getting there and finishing the try. And
a damn thing to Bod's line.
Yeah, absolutely. Because Bod is so unpredictable at the best of times that playing on his team can probably be, a bit confusing, I imagine. So, so they score that, and they're 13-7 at that point. And then straight after afterwards from the kickoff, the Lions get another attacking opportunity, which they so nearly take. Lee Byrne gets done correctly for crossing.
Yeah.
O'Driscoll runs around him with ease and sets up Tommy Bowe to get him into the corner, but obviously the penalty's been given.
But it's, I mean, again, O'Driscoll does sublimely well there.
Like, my God,
it's a
yeah.
far less easy 2-on-1 than it looks.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And like, look very, very easy.
The thing is, like, quite often, Burns' blocking line would not be penalised because there wouldn't be a player good enough to actually make a break off the back of it. You know,
yes.
Like quite often those lines will happen and a player would just kind of like would just take the ball in, you know, whatever. But to have a player who's that good that it can be made so obvious that Byrne takes out two players because they are that quick and so adept in space that the penalty is absolutely the right call and the Springboks survive it.
When going through 2009 and 2011 about how high tackles and a lot of other offences are far more harshly penalised.
Yes.
We covered this a bit in 2011. But obstruction and crossing is the one thing that is far less harshly penalised.
Yeah, yeah. That's kind of the biggest difference between rugby 2009 and rugby now.
Well, it's,
for me.
I don't think it's the biggest, but I think it's certainly.
I think it's one of them because, you know, in terms of the shape people play, you know, having hit runners and stuff is such an important part of today's game.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I thought you just meant the refereeing-wise.
No.
Completely.
That has completely changed the way the game is played.
It's certainly way up there. But that's the thing, right? People complain. I sometimes see people complain about obstruction and so on constantly happening, but that's the only place space is coming from now.
Yeah.
Obstructions and blocking runs and so
on.
And that is where space is coming from in the last 5 years because defenders have got so good.
Yeah.
And defenders are so good at reading whatever's going to happen that you only get it if you're putting 3 or 4 options in their face.
Good teams have kind of ditched the concept of counter attack as well. So like when teams kick long, they're often coached to just kind of not bother trying to sidestep anybody or give any flashy passes. Just get the ball, you know, into centre field and then just look for, you know, look up and see which of your players is making a hole for you. Who's pointing to a gap for you, you know? And running straight is kind of the best way to do a counter-attack these days because somebody will open a gap somewhere, all being well, for you to at least make a bit of an advancement, if not a break.
And you look at most tries in the last few years that have come off counter-attack. They've come off the second phase after counter-attack.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They've come off either the fullback or often the number eight in the backfield, thundering in, and then things being rearranged. So you look at Scotland and the Six Nations were dropping Finn Russell into the backfield.
Yeah.
Not so that he could actually counter-attack himself.
Yeah.
But so that he would just kind of wait in spaces where no one's going to kick to, so he could organise the attack.
And he can scan, you know. Like George Ford, we've pointed out, does that quite a lot, you know.
I think
we're going to have a surge of big, strong fullbacks coming up whose first job is to just get over the advantage line. Obviously, you know, number eight dropping to the backfield is quite a common thing, but I feel like we are going to get bigger fullbacks because counterattack's going to be less about good feet, you know.
Jaden Hayward's so gutted his time past him, isn't it?
Scott Spedding, where were you when we needed you?
If only. I also, just watching this game back made me think, I think we must be coming to the end of the kicking phase rugby in 2021 is currently in. Because this tour represents the end of the kicking phase in 2009.
Yeah.
You know, they kind of taken. It was really unfortunate that a kicking phase, you know, it's the kind of thing Eddie Jones talked about this a lot of, like, rugby always goes between a kicking phase and a attacking phase. And normally, lately, ever since 2007, where it was very much kicking phase on the World Cup, where every team kicked is what I'm sort of referring to, the idea that, like, that's how teams attacked, was teams didn't really counterattack, they focused on kicking because defence got on top of attack and, you know, it was good between attack phase and defence phase. Currently, kicking is completely on top of both defence and attack.
Yeah.
And watching this game back, this was the end of a kicking phase that encompassed the 2009. I suppose, no, it carried on a bit after this, but this was the start of things. You could see kind of attacks out and see back in. And by the following year, by the following Six Nations, it had come round and the tag was on top again.
Yeah.
And watching this made me feel like, thinking back on that Lions series, we are very close to this happening to that kicking game.
Yeah, yeah.
And we start to see bits of it in the Six Nations, then weirdly it didn't happen in the Lions.
Yeah.
I think it probably start to happen over the course of the Rugby Championship, but I don't, you know, it's hard to say for certain.
Yeah, maybe not as soon as that, but...
But I think it's going to start to happen in the next sort of six months. By the autumn, certainly by the Six Nations, we're going to see things swing back a bit,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
And we're going to see a far more open attacking game.
Yeah, yeah.
That hopefully carries through to the World Cup in 2023.
So, to carry on, the Beast Muller's victory again. So it goes 16-7.
There's a few of them. There's one of them where just like he sort of knocks on at the base. There's a few of them where they come out there. And it did get me thinking, Talupi Faletau was 18 at this point. He could have played
somewhere. Oh my God. Oh, that would have been great. That would have been a lot of fun if that happened. It would have been very controversial, don't get me wrong. But,
yes.
Yeah.
Bloody McGeegan and his Welsh bias.
Yeah. Oh, he could have been capped by Tonga at this point. You know, and then after this, the Beast mullers for victory again, so it goes to 19-7.
Wait a second, because I've got in my notes here, and it doesn't happen until after that. The Beast mullers for victory.
Yeah, yeah, it happens again, man. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, because then after that, the Beast mullers for victory.
Yeah, 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 and then after that, do you know what happens?
Do the Beast? No, he can't do.
Not again. It's just, it's a bit mean, that. It's not very rugby, that, is it?
There's a point after one of these scrums where I skipped forward through, you know, a restart or stoppage or something, mm-hmm. kind of pressing the, like, the fast forward 10 seconds button. And it combined Paul O'Connell, Ruan Pienaar, and some analysis of the scrum together to create this sentence. RuPaul struggled in the scrum there. Which, to be fair, RuPaul would struggle in the
scrum. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Especially against Tendai Mtaalia, you know?
Yeah.
Look, if Phil Vickery's not going to do very well, I dread to think how RuPaul would do in a scrum against him.
But I wouldn't even take my eyes off it either.
Very true. He's going to be glamorous in the process, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So, Sean de Villiers makes a break from a kickoff, tries this really speculative flick pass, attempting to find Brian Habana and send him in from 70 yards. Instead, he finds Bakis Borta, yes. who just decides, I'm not going to run forwards. I'm going to deliberately stop and hand people off to show I'm hard.
He didn't really need to show that, did he, Bakis?
No. But he liked to anyway, because he was.
Yeah. He could have... I wish he just lined up like Mauro Bougerol.
Yeah. Hey, we should introduce him to RuPaul.
Hey, and to this entire South African team, because they all ended up signing for him.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's true. Yeah, but anyway, yeah, so Jean de Villiers made that break and, you know, was very casual in the way he did that. Speaking of casual, JP Peterson's chip and chase, where he goes around Jamie Heaslip, like, he is walking, like, he forgets to press the sprint button and still gets around Heaslip with ease.
Yeah.
And regathers this chip that he does and just looks so graceful in the way he does it. Like, JP Peterson's one of these players who, like, people forget how skilled he was just because he was fast and he was big. So, like, he was always really fired up and, like...
And because JP Peterson's one of those players that, unfortunately, kept going far longer than he should have.
Yeah, I guess, but I don't think... Oh, no, to be fair, he did have that poor spell at the end of his career, didn't he? Yeah.
He did, so yeah. He, you know, he was brilliant. You know, obviously starting the World Cup final, started in the Lions series, was great in all of those.
Continued
his form through to the next World Cup. But then by 2015, you're going, oh, he's still going. And by the time he signed for Leicester, never mind, you know, the teams he played for after that, you were going... Oh, he's still
in 2015.
Going,
he was,
you know,
still very good.
So
in fairness,
2015, he was still an international caliber.
No, I think that's harsh, man. I think he was great in the 2015 World Cup. Like, he was still scoring tries. He was still hitting things hard.
That was it.
He,
like,
was great.
I remember thinking he was done before that World Cup, and then playing well in the World Cup itself.
Yeah, yeah, he was great in the World Cup. Leicester was
refound some form. Yeah, then he signed for Leicester for after the World Cup. It did not go well. Mm. He then went to Toulon and was an absolute shadow of himself.
Yeah.
By which I mean he couldn't make tackles and couldn't catch the ball because shadows don't have arms.
Yeah. But yeah, JP Peterson was just so, so
But no,
graceful.
That's the thing. Like, JP Peterson, sorry, the point I was making was he was an absolutely brilliant player.
Yeah.
And just one of those players who got really, really unlucky. I just think... the fact that he... you know, he had a few bad games and they clouded his career.
I think he's such a timeless winger, man. Like, I think him and Habana complemented each other brilliantly, but like, he was quick, he was balanced, he could kick, you know, and he was angry, you know, like, he hit everything. And the amount of times opposition fans will have gone, oh, JB Peterson's a bit of a prick, isn't he? Like, I would have said that at so many points, but like, in the best way possible, because like, he knows how to rile up his opposition. And the most annoying thing about it is he always comes out on top of them, you know, like, he will shit talk his opposite man and then he'll outrun him. And that is the annoying thing. Like, he was so talented, and he completely backed up the brashness he brought to the field.
Saw it a bit in this game as well, but also great under the high ball.
Yes,
which wasn't a given at this point as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, played quite a lot of fullback as well for the Springboks.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, all levels.
Yeah. Oh, he's such a good player.
Of course,
such a good
player. Of course, was named after JPR Williams.
Oh, of course. So, of course, he was.
Must run in the name.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Speaking of fullbacks, so Lee Byrne goes off injured, Rob Carney comes on. Very good replacement to have, because that was quite up in the air who was going to play the game anyway, you know.
Hey! Up in the air, like they do, like they go. Like,
nice.
Like the film Up in the Air, which came out this year in 2000.
Shut up.
Starring George Clooney. So that's where my brain's been for 2 weeks. I've exclusively thought about Jason Reitman's career. So Rob Carney is absolutely possessed after he comes on. He looks like the Satan that got out of me when I burped and joined him. He is covering every single blade of grass furiously.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, he looks... He is... I've rarely seen a fullback as, like, almost angry as him.
I've never...
And, like, not in the way that, like, Stuart Hogg was starting fights in that Lions test. But he is just determined to cover every single blade of grass. Like,
I just...
It's the kind of performance you normally see from flankers.
I look at Rob Carney and I think, I've never seen, like, a back on a rugby field who is determined to have less fun than he is.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
Like, he
is
just...
Is your task boring? I shall complete it.
Yeah, yeah. It's at boring Carney. I was just convinced that, like, he just wanted to, like, anything that would just result in, that is positive, good. That's all he cares about, you know? He forgot why he played rugby in the first place, you know? But yeah, he was good when he came on, you know, and he...
There's a point where he's on the end of an overlap. Well, in an overlap, and if he draws the man and gives it to Tommy Bowes, it's a try scoring chance. I don't think it would have been a try itself.
Yeah.
And Carney goes himself, but you're thinking it would have been wrong if he did anything else, considering the way he's playing.
Yeah.
Like, the way Carney's playing is so focused on himself.
Don't think about
it
passing, Rob.
It would have felt really weird if he passed.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have trusted him to.
Yeah.
It's the way he's covering
the Teddy Thomas complex, isn't it?
Yes. It is not worth it.
On 37 minutes, Phil Vickery gets mulled at the scrum again. Piano misses a penalty in the going for half time. Not long after this. JP Peterson kicks it out really angrily for half time. He does a really weird spinning box kick.
It's not dissimilar to Faf in the second test this year.
Yeah, it is quite similar to that, actually, yeah. So, second half, we'll just crack on, why don't we?
Second half.
Roberts takes the kickoff. They have a nice sort of phase of attack. And Phil Vickery gets penalised in the loose this time.
Yeah, and they then cut to Adam Jones on the bench.
Yeah. And when the cameras are cutting to somebody sitting down, you think, you know, it's enough of a talking point that everybody's eyes on somebody playing badly.
Look, they cut to Harry Ellis. That's how desperate they were to get him off. Like, put literally anyone on.
They cut to RuPaul at one point. But the thing is, it's such a difficult thing to sit here and be critical of a game like that, because if I'd had that performance Phil Vickery had, you know, I'd be so embarrassed and like so like self-conscious, and you know, you imagine he was really beating himself up after it, when literally the guy opposite him played a lot better than him, and that's just kind of the way it went.
That
Phil Vickery, as I've said countless times, was a brilliant player. And Tendai just took him to the cleaners that day. You really feel for Vickery, in a way, because everyone's calling him to come off.
It's the one position where the opposition player, you know, in the kind of corresponding position to you, so, you know, tighter rather than loosehead, or the other way around, playing incredibly, incredibly well prevents you from playing
well. Like, they determine how well you play.
Yeah. Like, if a fly half, if Rowan Pienaar played as well as the Beast did, right?
Yeah.
It would have been entirely possible for Stephen Jones to play as well as he did.
Yeah, would not reflect on it.
The Beast playing that well means that Phil Vickery suddenly has an absolute pasting.
Yeah, absolutely. So it happens that Adam Jones comes on for Phil Vickery about three or 4 minutes into the half. And, you know, there is a sigh of relief going around and you really feel for Vicks, bless him.
Yeah, I do. If I were Phil Vickery, I'd want to be pulled at halftime.
Yeah,
I kind
I
of wouldn't want
the embarrassment.
The extra 5 minutes of emptying the tank and so on.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Like, there's an argument he should just come on in the first half, Adam Jones.
I think if the game was now, I think that that's possible that would have happened because I think that first half substitutions, particularly in the front row, are much more of a thing now than they used to be.
No, they are.
Or even at fly half, to be honest, like it's happened before where Eddie Jones has done it a couple of times. There was the Tamana Harrison incident where he took him off. Luther Burrell was the other one. Yeah, and he played with two playmakers instead. Like, it happens, you know. Front rowers. As I say, I mean, there's the Italian tactic, obviously. I remember Rhys Carey got pulled off for Wales in the first half.
Ireland.
Yeah, against Ireland when he was getting hammered in the scrum. And it's one of those things that I think international rugby just generally is a lot more ruthless now than it was in 2009.
Yeah.
But I do feel like there would have been a lot less care for Vickery's confidence by pulling him off before half-time.
Phil Vickery is also quite lucky in that he is an established player. As I said, he's won a World Cup. He's been around for a very long time at this point. This was him coming into the end of his career, this tour. And he was, as shown in clips in the Lions documentary this year, such a well-respected figure that he seemed to be closer to the coaches than the other players.
Yeah.
And that, him being the guy who suffered this level of humiliation was... It's an awful thing to say, but like, if anyone had to, he's probably the guy who could take it managing.
I know what you mean. And like, you know, I guess you're alluding to a couple of things that happen, you see on the DVD that happen after this, that kind of define his strength of character, you know? And that is what makes him such a good lion rather than, you know, him taking a pasting from the best loose head prop in the world in the first test.
Him, you know, there's a hug between him and Ian McGeoghegan in the documentary.
Yeah, and Geach is crying his eyes
out. And playing, far better in the third test.
Yeah.
Both of them, you know, really show that, again, we said he's a nice lad, and obviously he had the worst game of his career here, but there's a lot more to be said about Fury Cree.
There's a lot
more you're not seeing on the pitch in this game.
So Adam Jones's first act on the field is to defend a South African line-out.
Yes.
Which goes pretty well for the box.
South Africa awarded the penalty from about the 22-metre line. Very kickable. They've been kicking all of those the whole first half. It is 19-7. They kick for the corner. It is almost instantly 26-7. Adam Jones does like a really good job of defending that until he's told to roll or peel away.
Yeah.
At which point, they were around and Heinrich Brosseau scores.
Yeah. And he deserved a try, man. Like, he was a menace. And he comes up with the ball. It could have been any of the Springbok pack coming up with that, but They totally deserved that, man. Like, their driving line-out was spot on all day.
They then, a few minutes after this, bring off Heinrich Brosseau and bring on Dani Russo.
Yeah.
Right? And bringing on Russo for Brosseau is kind of like, you know when you're playing Scrabble, right? And you're going to put down a really good word. Then you realise, actually, if you change it slightly, you can put over a triple word score.
Yeah.
That's what replacing, you know, changing Brusso to Russo is.
Sure.
Putting the U in later and removing the B at the start.
Yeah. Although that said, Dani Russo is spelt with an O rather than a U. He's Russo.
No, he's got a U later.
No.
Look at
it.
Exactly.
Russo's Russo. Oh, I don't know. The good thing is we're not actually playing Rugby Player Scrabble
now. Oh, okay, I know what you're saying. Yeah, fine. Yeah, exactly. You're just changing a bit, aren't you?
Yeah.
Changing just a little bit.
Yeah.
We should play Rugby Player Scrabble, though. That'd be
We should do that. Next episode, we'll ditch the second
test. You am is... You desperately need am, don't you?
Yes,
at one point as well, then the Lions get down into the 22 and they have, you know, a bit of a period of pressure. So Mike Phillips almost scores. The referee is very reluctant to let Christoph Burdos have any word on it.
Backy's Borta kind of intervenes quite well to make sure
gets
Phillips
a hand in
his
as Phillips is.
Yeah,
Phillips is reaching out. Borta kind of slaps it. Lee Mears dives on it. Lee Mears is then taken off to go to the sideline because Sean Edwards is starting to get angry and needs some Monster Munch.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, he pulls his 22p out of his pocket and gets two crisps. The Tommy Bow makes a break as well.
Side note, right? About Lee Mears, because I think this is the last we see of him on the tour.
Yeah.
Oh, no, he plays a third test, doesn't he? No, never mind. Lee Mears has enormous, enormous nice uncle energy.
Yeah, I really liked Lee Mears. I remember... there was a rugby player special of The Weakest Link.
Mm.
Where, for anybody who doesn't know, it's a UK sort of game show on television.
Yeah, it was a game show that was on every day.
And they had a celebrity special of rugby players. And Lee Mears was on that. And I can remember feeling really, really guilty because I realised he's a really nice lad and I really like him. And it was that was like one of the first times I realised how much I like genuinely loved an England player. And he sold the host, Anne Robinson, quite a lot of crisps that day.
Yeah. I mean, she was loaded up for quite a long time.
Yeah. And Jamie Roberts won the thing as well.
Doctor Who. Jamie Roberts won it. Andy Powell.
He thought... Yes, go on.
Which schoolboy wizard featured in the books The Chamber of Secrets and The Prisoner of Azkaban? And he said The Wizard of Oz. And what was his other great answer?
There was Anne Robinson asked him the word rugby begins with which letter in the alphabet? And he had to think, ah.
Thomas Castagnier was on it, former France fly half. Mm. And he was asked, you know, like custard cream and hobnob or whatever.
Yeah.
Digestives, yeah. Are types of what word beginning in B? And he said, he kind of waited for a second and went, butter. Which, still, whenever I see him as a pundit, I think, butter.
There's highlights of that on YouTube. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's good. It's worth watching.
Yeah. We're not going to do a bonus episode on it as much as it feels like we just have. Anyway, back to the Lions test. From 2009, Tommy Bowe makes a break where runs a really nice hard line off Phillips' shoulder. And then he tries a really high-risk offload. Luckily, it comes off a South African hand. So the Lions get a scrum. Great thing. But then again, they have actually got Adam Jones on now, who is like one of the best tight heads of all time.
Yes.
So
this is Adam Jones' first scrum.
Yeah.
And the Lions get a nudge on suddenly.
Yeah.
Suddenly the Lions are on top.
And you suddenly realise...
nowhere.
The thing is, I don't know if you did this. So the Lions have this scrum. The ball comes in. You see it at Heaslip's feet. Obviously you have the moment of dread of, oh no, it's about to go backwards. They take a step forward. And then you suddenly look at the scoreboard and think, okay, what can we do now? Like, how far beyond us is this?
Yeah, so the Lions do go for the corner and they keep pushing for a while.
Yeah.
And they have quite a long sustained period of attack where they're on top of South Africa but not able to cross the line.
Yeah.
My favourite moment during this. So Stephen Jones takes the ball in the short side, offloads to Adam Jones, who then offloads to Alan Wynne-Jones, who carries it in, right? Miles Harrison's commentary goes as following. I wrote it down. Jones. He
doesn't.
He covered it.
He doesn't need to overwrite it, you know.
No, he's like, well, Jones has it still.
Yeah, that's fair.
So this, no need to replace it.
This period of attack is called short because Matthew Rees punches PS Space on the floor.
A weird thing that is.
It's kind of a punch. It's like perfectly halfway between being a fist and an open palm, but he just kind of swings his arm into him.
So this was back before the TMO could step in for foul play, right? Yeah. So it had to be the touch judges.
Yeah.
So the touch judge calls over Bryce Lawrence, and we kind of cut back to it.
Stuart Dickinson.
Stuart Dickinson, thank you. They've shown us Brian Habana and having a go at Matthew Rees afterwards.
Yes.
And that's the only footage we've seen up until now.
And it's rare to see Habana get that fiery as well.
Yeah.
He was really furious with him.
Brian Habana is genuinely maybe the nicest man I've ever met. Right?
Yeah.
Like, Brian Habana is unbelievably lovely.
Have you met Brian Habana? Mentioned it.
I've got Brian Habana's number, mate. It's genuinely...
Oh, what's that?
It's 11.
Okay.
So Matthew Rees kind of... He swings, as you say, what... You can't see it because there's only one angle of it and the kind of... is Brousseau, isn't it? He's hitting.
Oh, I thought it was Spies.
Spies. One of them. Whichever South African it is, he hits.
Yeah.
He hits them. You can't see what his hand is, if it's a fist or a palm.
Yeah.
Because the head is in the way. And he hits them. And this is a really weird place to punch someone if he is punching them. On the space between the shoulder and the neck.
Yeah.
Right? No one has ever aimed to punch someone there before.
Yeah. It's a really, like, not very good strike. Which is why it's just a penalty.
Yeah. I think he's going for that thing, you know, when they kind of like, get an arm off him.
Yeah.
But there's no arm on him.
Yeah.
So there's sort of nothing in it. Like, it is just a penalty.
Yeah.
But when the touchhead calls him across, and his words are, he asks, you know, he says there was a punch. And, you know, Bryce Lawrence then says, you punched someone, I'm penalising you to him. And Matthew Rhys goes, wait, what? Like, I have punched people. That was not a punch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Matthew Rhys knows how to throw a good punch. Like, clearly yeah, he wasn't yeah. trying.
There are stories. So the toucher says to him, to Dickinson, I didn't see where he made contact, but it could have been the head. Which nowadays yeah. we would look at that 16 times yeah, yeah, yeah. and there'd probably be a card.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I guess it was a bad enough punch that he didn't get sent off for it. So.
But also, from where the touch had stood, it looked like a punch to the head.
Yeah, yeah,
that
yeah.
kind of
yeah.
very flat angle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You can totally see why he called it like that. So the penalty gets reversed, South Africa go back downfield. Yeah. There's a point where the Lions try like a kind of back row move off the back of a scrum. And Croft gives Jamie Roberts like a really good carry, kind of by popping out early from the scrum. And it's just one of those novelty things, like you'd never see that now. And then the Lions eventually get back into the Springbok 22. And the Springbok defence is so, so good. Like, they're really just not good. Presenting them anything. Eventually, Brian O'Driscoll's forced into trying this chip over the top to find Tommy Bowe. And it just about goes into touch. Like, Bowe sort of fumbles it, sort of catches it, and goes into touch. But Frans Steen had him covered anyway. Like, the Bok defence was so, so spot on.
It's a pretty good option, but I think it's the only time in the game that Bod's execution isn't spot on.
He looked a bit... Like, it's not the wrong option, but as soon as you look back on it, you go, oh, he was kind of frustrated into doing that, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think so. I think he's just got no... His option to carry in and I'll try this chip, but he's half on.
Yeah.
Around that time as well, Stephen Jones goes for a cross kick that's very reminiscent of the one we covered in the previous episode, and I think he's doing it just because, you know, he's friends with Nigel Owens. They both, you know, live in similar parts of West Wales.
Yeah,
and I think he just wants to get him excited about something in the game. We then also, the Lions around this period, clear from their own 22. They put up like a really contestable, like a good modern kick. The kind of kick we saw a lot in the 2021 series.
Yeah.
And Rob Carney goes for a slide tackle.
Yes! I found this so confusing. Like, you know what? I didn't even write this down or anything, how weird that was. Because my brain just simply refused to compute that that happened.
Yeah. Like, he leaves with his two... He's kind of... Both feet out first, trips up Frans Steen. Frans Steen loses the ball on the floor and it isn't given. It's given as a South African scrum.
Yeah, yeah.
But, right, and Stuart Barnes is going, I can't believe they didn't award the scrum to the Lions. And he's going, no, I can't believe Rob Carney isn't in the bin for a slide tackle.
Like, he very clearly trips him up.
Yeah.
I don't know. Rob Carney, whatever he took before the game, you know, I'd like a bit of it.
I would, but not any time before I'm going to bed.
Yes, very true, very true.
Not if I have to sleep in the next 38 hours.
I imagine he took the same stuff after Clerk Takes every week.
Yes. And frankly, that Chili Boy Ralapelli takes every few hours. You know, mixed in with literally everything else in the world.
Yeah. What? Yeah. Yeah. What's that? Heroin. that was an accusation. Okay. I retract that, Chili Boy, if you're listening.
No, you don't.
So... There's then another try. The Lions try and drive for the line. Drive for the line, Lions. They have a lot of pick and goes and stuff. And again, the South African defence is incredibly resolute. But the thing is, the Lions eventually realise there is one place in the South African defensive line where there is space. It's not in around the ruck. It's not out wide. It's specifically one pass away from first receiver. Is where all the space is. And they keep hitting up around the ruck, and then they try and go wide a couple of times, and then they eventually clock it and just kind of go, we're going to make some breaks, lads. So Stephen Jones is looking like he's pulling the strings here. And then eventually it's Bod who pops up in midfield, pops it up to Tom Croft, who's running a pretty good tip online.
Before we get there, they go wide first, and again, it's one of those, you know, it's the opposite of earning the right to go wide. It's earning the right to go tight. You know, they're trying to stretch the defense you know, contract it again. Jamie Roberts' step before his
catch. Oh, yes!
Jamie Roberts' step, right? Which is a rare sentence.
Yeah.
But that was what really set him apart at the best period of his career. Yeah, right? 2009, 2011, and then when he got back in the worst season, sort of 2015 as well. 2016, I think it was. He was really, really good again.
Yeah.
It was when he was using his footwork as well.
Yeah.
He does this. He's kind of beginning to go into contact. He slows down, steps, and then smashes back in. Gets immediately back up to his top speed. And carries them straight to the try line. Like, especially, there's like 15, 20 metres made there.
Having O'Driscoll knowing exactly what line to run off in every single time as well. Like, oh man, what a glorious combination. Roberts had a really good second half here.
Yeah, so Bod is doing a lot of flashy stuff and all of it's coming off.
Yeah.
But a lot of it's just because he has someone so effective as a foil and so versatile as well. Like, literally whatever Brian O'Driscoll needs to make to buy him the time and space Roberts to do whatever flashy do bullshit he's wanting.
Yeah.
Roberts would do it perfectly.
Yeah.
He was brilliant. And so this is why. Yeah, this was one of the great partnerships, despite the fact they played together about six times.
Oh, loved them.
They're so good. And both of them play individually well as complementing each other.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, so Brian O'Driscoll feeds Tom Croft on this tip online. And he scores a try.
Any rugby fan should look at that Brian O'Driscoll, even South Africans who obviously, didn't like it being so great at the time. It's worth looking back at how well they played together, just as like a pure
as an objective spectacle.
Like, I've barely seen someone better. I say, and then Bod's popping up at first receiver and just playing whatever role he needs.
Mm.
He's almost like a sort of like, like in sevens or touch rugby or something, where you've got like a playmaker popping up repeatedly, even if they're not necessarily the fly half. They just
He can play both as kind of a 10 and as a flanker. Like, he kind of plays the best of both of those worlds. And he is a really quite incredible rugby player.
Yeah. So the Lions score, that's about 68 minutes, I think.
Yeah, I think it's just past 70. So they get to 26-12. Or 26-14, isn't he? He converts it, doesn't he?
Yeah. They then continue to put more pressure on. We see Mornay Stain's first touch of international rugby, which, look, I didn't remember this. Mornay Stain's first touch of international rugby is... pretty much sums up where he was going from here. So he is behind his own try line. He has thrown a really wild pass by Ricky January. And I want to take a moment to just acknowledge Ricky January.
Yeah, love that guy.
Beloved Ricky January.
Yeah.
Go
for dive pass as well.
Right? Yes, I was going to bring this up later. But yes, Ricky January. Beautiful, beautiful man.
Yeah, my favourite fat scrum half ever.
Still playing. Ricky January is still playing.
Of course he is. He's playing like
French fourth division.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's the fourth division.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. He is just such an inspiration towards all scrum halves. Like, I feel empowered, but knowing that scrum halves can still play with a nine on their back if they are like 300 pounds.
Okay, so I've just looked it up. Ricky January is still playing, right? He is in the French sixth division.
Oh my God. Is he getting paid for that, you think?
I think so. I think he's probably getting, like, boot money, isn't he?
Yeah.
But, like, considering the second division is the Pro Da, right? I'm imagining it's, like, the seventh division is hell. Like, he's one notch above actually playing in hell.
I'm pretty sure he's in the cage fighting division of French rugby.
There is a photo of him out there, which I think we need to tweet out alongside this podcast, because he is magnificent nowadays.
Yeah.
He is bigger than any of the props playing in this game in 2009. He is enormous.
I love that guy. He is like the epitome of what all rugby players should aspire to be, Ricky January, in my opinion.
Absolutely. He is the greatest rugby player of all time.
Yeah. Love that guy. Top lad as well, as far as I can tell. But yeah, anyway, you were saying he passed the ball to deliver Mornay Stain his first touch of international rugby. He was also still playing.
Horrible pass. Horrible pass around his ankles. Stain, under enormous pressure from Martin Williams, regathers the ball, does a little step, gives it to Bannon, who can clear faultlessly. Like, really super composed. That's his first touch of international rugby.
And his second is putting up a flawless bomb in the air for Peter to chase.
Yep. You know, South Africa don't score any points during the period where he's on the field, but he makes up for that next week.
Yeah. Then comes a bit of a turning point in a way. The Lions swing it wide, so there's some great hands. It goes Stephen Jones to Brian O'Driscoll to Jamie Roberts to Rob Carney to Ugo Monya on the wing. And Monya steps inside last second and loses control of the ball about an inch out from the try line. And who is it making the tackle on him? But young Mornay Stain slaps the ball out of his hands as Monya is stepping over the try line. And it's one of those that it gets brought up in terms of, Ugo Monya's Lions tour and stuff. Because obviously there was the one earlier with the Peterson incident and this one. And go on.
Ugo Monya has, throughout his career and even since he retired, now that he is, one of the highest profile pundits in rugby, probably is about to become the highest profile, Question of sport and Strictly Come Dancing and so on. He has always taken a lot of shit for this game.
Yeah.
And watching it back, right, and this is something that I don't I think there's a lot of rugby journalists out there, a lot of rugby pundits, whatever, out there that want to be friends with the players and so on. And, like, I've never wanted to do that because I think it makes most of my job. And I recognise I have had some level, you know, I'm not, like, close friends with Hugo Mario or something, but I've talked to him a handful of times, you know. I recognise there's some level of pre-existing relationship there. And I don't want to say this just out of, like, oh, because he's my friend, you know. So I reckon I want to say that as, like, a disclaimer. But I don't think Hugo Mario plays badly.
I don't. I think those are the only two things that could be perceived as mistakes in this game.
There's one moment where he flies about a line, he makes an incorrect defensive read, but the Lions cover it anyway, mm-hmm. right? I think that's sort of it in terms of mistakes.
Yeah.
I think he's on the end, he takes a high shot, it is not penalised, and then he can't finish from there.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a red mark against his name, that first one.
No.
And you're asking a lot of him. It'll be penalty try. Yeah. It'll be penalty try.
And also, like, the speed he showed to get into that position in the first place, you know?
Like, yeah, exactly.
You've got to give him some credit there.
This one, he obviously takes... he takes quite a difficult pass.
Yeah.
He steps superbly.
Yeah.
Gets himself in a position to do it. And then is on the end of a brilliant tackle by Steyn, who wraps the ball.
It's
right?
Class. Yeah.
I don't think... Obviously, you know, there's manners in which he could have finished it. I don't think there's anything he does technically wrong.
Like,
or from a kind of rugby point of view, he does wrong there.
Yeah, yeah. I think...
Right, you're looking at, like, the only way he could have done better necessarily is to be, like, Joshua Tuivasa-Sova or, a freak of nature.
Well...
Steyn wouldn't be able to get their arms around.
On one hand, I totally get why somebody would say he's a test match starting Lions winger. He, you know, at this point, you're not wrong to call him a world-class winger, you know, and think... You know, that you'd kind of be insulting him if you didn't say you'd expect him to finish from there, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, you do expect him to finish in that situation. But I think that's the only thing that you could call a mistake that he really does wrong in this game.
Yeah.
I think he has an excellent game all round, and I think that he really complimented that back line with Beau and Carney in the end. But yeah, that was sort of the Lions chance. They knock it on, South Africa get the put in. And you know what? It's not all doom and gloom South Africa having the put in, is it? We've got Adam Jones on the pitch.
Yeah. What a difference Adam Jones and, to some extent, Matthew Rhys as well.
And also, Guthrie Steenkamp and Dion Carson's coming on for South Africa. That also definitely made a difference.
Yes. So the Lions do win the ball back, and there's this long... It feels like a long period of pressure.
Yeah.
I think it was less long than I remembered it being at the time, because at the time it felt like it was 20 minutes
from
the line. And in reality, it's probably 4 or 5. But that's a long time when you're in that kind of test match adrenaline. And a test as good as this as well.
Yeah.
And I remember how worked up I was for this. I remember we'd been walking the dog before going in.
Oh, really?
And
I remember that.
Yeah. I was at our parents the whole time saying, can we hurry up? Can we hurry up? Get back for the Lions. And we got in as the teams were being announced. The teams are kind of doing that thing where they come forward and say, Hugo Monya.
Cross their arms. Yeah, yeah.
Tome Croft. Cross their arms, you know. Lee Byrne. Oi, listen up. Do you want some cash for your gold?
Lee Mears, crisp salesman.
Yes. Yeah, we got in as that was happening. And I was like shaking with nerves and excitement and so on. I was really, really eager and up for it. I had a blue Lion shirt.
I had a red one. I had the proper one, yeah. Which is now gone to bits.
All right, mate. Mine still fits me, but the HBO logo is gone.
I wore that shirt to my first ever rugby training session.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I might have worn mine to that as well.
Yeah.
I once wore it for a non-uniform day during this tour as well.
Oh, I definitely did that. I remember once wearing my my yellow Wales shirt to a non-uniform day.
Yeah, I once wore a Cardiff Blues shirt and I felt hugely embarrassed, and it genuinely shook me in a way that's meant that I've pretty much only worn... I've pretty much always worn blazers since. Like, it was a feeling embarrassed about wearing a Cardiff Blues shirt, who aren't even the club I support, to a non-uniform day, genuinely shaped me as a man.
I didn't realise that fashion was a thing until, like, 7 years after leaving school. So, you know, I mean, I still wear my rugby stash, like, 6 days a week, you know. I'm literally wearing my long-eating training jersey right now, because it's just so comfortable. I love it.
This is the thing. Like, there was one comment got really excited when they saw Chasing the Sun, because, like, it's Squidge in a suit. And what they don't realise is that's how I dress every single day. You know, like, I always wear a t-shirt and a blazer. Like, sometimes a shirt, but it's pretty much always t-shirt and blazer.
Sure.
And I'm usually pained to take the blazer off if I'm out in public. I am very much a blazerman. As I believe they say. Anyway, that's a tangent.
Yeah.
So
here comes Roberts.
So the end of this incredible, this incredible test match. Jamie Roberts, also a Blazerman, I'm assured, I've seen. Yeah, great carry.
Yeah.
Again, coming off this scrum. They crash it up and they run another phase in field. And things start to open up. You start to see there's numbers on either side. You know, South Africa really contracted around the ruck.
Yeah.
Victor Matfield notices this and shoots it really fast on Phillips, trying to slap the ball out of his hand. Phillips kind of takes a little step, notices, and goes straight through.
Yeah, scores and under the posts.
This whole passage, these whole last 10 minutes are some of my favourite Miles Harrison commentary. I've talked about Miles Harrison a lot
Thumps
here.
Thumps the ball away. Oh, it's great.
And him, you know, screaming, "There's the try!" And Harrison becomes a fan.
Yeah.
At one point,
you can hear his voice creaking.
At one point, there's Monya's, you know, the kind of like 13 type position with Bo outside him on the overlap. Mm. And he screams, "Monya has to give it!"
Yes.
And then goes, "Oh, doesn't!" And he kind of remembers he's commentating midway through because he's just become a fan.
I love Miles Harrison. Like, man. He makes every Lions test so much better, as we discussed on the previous episode.
Yeah,
his commentary is. It's kind of how we were all feeling at this point. I think he always does it justice. He's great.
So Phillips scores and him and Barnes get incredibly excited about it.
So the score's now 21-26. I kind of forgot it was this close by the end because...
I remember the comeback.
Let's not beat around the bush. I remember there being a bit of a comeback. I didn't quite realise it was to the point at which the Lions could attack to win the game at the end. I remember there was a bit of a fight back in like a heroic kind of a way. Mm. But like... I didn't realise quite how close it was.
So Stuart Barnes then says, "We have an absolutely unforgettable 5 minutes of Lions rugby coming up." And I realise I had forgotten it entirely.
Yeah. I had the exact
The
same
only
problem.
Thing I remember was in the 79th minute saying the phrase, "Come on, 1 minute, one try," being really pumped up, and our father, if you remember him, because this was back, back 12 years ago.
It's a retrospective podcast.
Yeah, I remember him saying, "No, this hope's all gone. It's definitely not happening," which I think kind of summed up his influence on both our lives.
It's annoying that he was right.
So, so rarely it happened.
By the way, if you're listening, you're a prick. Carry on.
I think he's done that generally to everyone.
No, just our father.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
and Jimmy
that would
Savile.
Imply a level of interest. He is not. If he's listening, I'd be really impressed. I'd have more questions for Jimmy Savile if he's listening.
Yeah,
for a father, you know, it's the first time he's shown interest in any of us in, you know, quite a few years. So,
or Jimmy Savile.
But Jimmy Savile has, yes, not shown interest in me in quite a few years. Also hasn't shown interest in me since I was a child.
Yes, exactly. Anyway, Lions score.
The Lions then
21-26.
South Africa then kick long, and Stephen Jones has a moment of considering running it, but instead hoofs it back. And Ricky January signs his contract with the Ospreys a few months earlier and knocks it on.
Yeah, he is a Welshman. I have that written down.
Yeah. Ricky January knocks it on, and this was the
in
thing
in
their
own
half. You know, Stuart Barnes say, yeah. So the Lions have a scrum about 40 metres from South African line.
Yeah.
And I remember none of this, right? Which proves Stuart Barnes' point.
Sure.
I've got 5 minutes of line rugby. And I looked at it and I did think, have they changed it? Have they changed what happened from 2009? Is it different now? Because I definitely don't remember Dion Carstens playing.
Yeah. I definitely didn't remember that either. But, you know, I scarcely remember Carstens, to be honest. He was one of those names that came up when I was... Because he was slightly before my time, I think.
Mm.
So, yeah. But yeah, I don't remember him playing in this at all.
So they then...
But he did.
They then make a... They then... Yeah, so Jamie Roberts takes the ball, makes a bust. And, yeah, tell us, what happens next?
So he throws an offload to find Tommy Bowe, and it gets intercepted, but... I really like that he goes for that offload because he's going for a scoring play. Like, he goes, I've got the world's best finisher on my shoulder. If this pass happens to come off, it's quite a low percentage pass. If this comes off, we are winning the first test of this Lions series. It gets intercepted by Jacques Ferry, I think, but...
I think it is. You look back at that offload, right? Bo is in the process of changing his line as he's doing it. He is absolutely stepping Mornay Stanley.
Yeah.
Like, Bo is going under the post if he takes that. But if that intercept isn't made, Tommy Bo goes under the post and the Lions win this in the last minute with the conversion.
It's a low percentage play, but it's a potential scoring play. It's a winning play.
It's worth
play.
Throwing.
Yeah.
I had no memory of that whatsoever.
No, me neither.
Of it being, again, I remembered it being, the scoreboard being close.
It's really
ballsy. I did not remember there being a moment where they could have won it.
Yeah.
And as I say, like, I was expecting Tommy Bo to take that and go under the post watching like, it back, because I'd forgotten that.
Let's not beat around the bush, right? The Lions got bullied for 60 minutes, didn't they? Or maybe 50 minutes. They got absolutely bullied by up front by the Springboks. And they were far and far away the better team. And, you know, they 100,000% deserved to win this. So the thought of the Lions coming anywhere near winning this game was so hard to get into my head, even watching this back, because my memory of this game was just the Lions getting bullied up front and then there being a bit of a fight back, but nothing too serious. But the fact that they were within touching distance of maybe even winning the thing was an insanity.
We then have one of my favourite things. South Africa clear the ball from there because still a few minutes to play.
Yeah.
And Brian O'Driscoll has dropped himself to fullback and launches the counter-attack.
Yes.
And again, you kind of think he could create something here.
Yeah,
He could do anything from here.
Yeah. That's quite a smart move, to be honest. Just put the one guy that you can just rely on to maybe do something, no matter what position they're playing. And just hope they do something.
He then gets injured in the process of counter-attacking.
Yeah, he does, goes for a little chip kick.
So Ronan O'Gara then warms up on the sideline. And I think there's an interesting parallel world of what if Ronan O'Gara comes on here. And he kicks to the corner instead of Stephen Jones. Stephen Jones hits the outside of his boot on kicking from the corner.
Yeah.
The Lions only get it to 22. If they instead make the 5-meter line or something, you've either got the chance for Maul or you've got the second distributor allowing someone different to...
You say second distributor. You're implying Ronan O'Gara is a distributor.
You've got someone in there to do a cross kick.
Yeah, sure.
Nigel Owens
That kick for the corner would have gone a lot better, but then you would have had to attack with Ronan O'Gara straight afterwards.
Sure. I would have been really interested in how that would have
gone. Yeah, that is an interesting slide.
You don't want your best player going off for a minute to go when you've got a...
Sure,
you know.
Yeah.
But I think there's potentially a different game if O'Gara kicks to the corner instead of Stephen Jones who slices it.
But Matt Field knocks it on in the line out. They have a bit of an attack from the scrum. Also, it's an incredible read from Matt Field. Like, the amount of lineouts, by the way, he was just completely a complete menace.
We haven't mentioned his name at all.
No.
To Matt Field.
He was unreal, man.
Really, really
like,
good.
To skip ahead to it, he's a man of the match contention easily because he was stealing lineouts. He was so reliable, even when they just knew they were going to throw it to Matt Field, like it wouldn't make an impact, you know. And he was always in the way. If
he
not,
he comes
stealing.
In flawlessly at scrum half, and you don't notice anything.
Yeah, like his skills around the park were really, really good.
I couldn't shake like how good would Victor Matfield be if he played now?
Yeah,
now that second rows need a far more rounded
again,
game.
Timeless player, I think,
because he had that.
Yeah,
then. You know, he had the chip kicks and he had that, which was late this year, wasn't he? Doing the for Jock Free.
He had the skills that were unnecessary for him at the time, which are completely fundamental now. Yeah,
yeah,
he was unbelievable.
I think he's just an all-time great. He's just an
but so the Lions have a bit of an attack, sort of just outside of the 22 of the Springboks, and it's Dani Rousseau who comes up with the winning turnover, the kick to touch. Obviously, Matt Field wins the line out, and Ricky January boots the ball out for full time.
Yes, and you're left. The Lions are left kind of heartbroken, but also thinking that was fair.
Yeah.
South Africa left relieved but encouraged for the next test.
Yeah,
and I think everyone watching. Really, really excited for both the next test and the following series in 12 years' time, which has to live up to this.
Sure. But yeah, I mean, the thing Stuart Barnes brings up is that Peter DeVille shouldn't have made those changes. He shouldn't have brought on Steenkamp and Carsons and January with the three he picked out.
Whereas, I think, on the other hand, the Lions make all their substitutions. I say, Adam Jones probably could have come on sooner.
Yeah.
I think bringing on Matthew Rees for a South African scrum on the try line really inspired timing on that.
Martin Williams came on at the right time.
When they bring Martin Williams on is brilliant.
Yeah.
That's a really good call.
Yeah.
Bringing him on, and he kind of does start to open things up a bit because he's an incredibly different type of player to David Wallace.
Yeah.
And he really
O'Callaghan on for Alwyn Jones was an inspired choice as well. Like, he came on and he just worked. Like, he works like a wind-up toy, Donnacho O'Callaghan.
O'Callaghan had that thing that Sam Warburton used to say, whenever I'm on the bench, I want to put 80 minutes of effort into the kind of 15-20 minutes I played. Like,
and he was double-rucking
him a lot. Alwyn Jones, obviously, phenomenal, all-time great player, right? O'Callaghan, Tom Savage would agree he is, but O'Callaghan then comes on and does 80 minutes worth of work in 15 minutes. He works incredibly
hard. The flip side, Andreas Becker coming on for Mackie Botha is outstanding. Like, he was like...
He is actually one of your...
He's such a forgotten player, but he was just a really world-class nuts and bolts player. Like, completely flawless at set piece and hard as nails. Like, what more do you want?
One of those players that literally any international team would have wanted in their squad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 100%. You
know? He might not have started for them, but you always wanted him in your squad.
Yeah. He was exactly who they needed to come onto the field when he did.
Massive, nuts and bolts, good carrier. Makes a key turnover in this game as well.
Yeah.
Really good, dynamic but unshowy player.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I had forgotten how good a game this was. Really exciting.
I forgot how close it was by the end.
Yeah, and even when it is 26-7, it feels far closer.
Yeah,
it feels like there's far less in it. It feels like the Lions could come back at any moment.
Yeah, the margins are so small, aren't they?
And, like a lot of people talk about the next week's game, which we'll come on to next week.
Sure.
The second test, as one of the best games of rugby ever played.
Yeah.
Right? And watching this back here, look, I think, obviously we'll watch the second test back next week and we'll get into this in detail, but does the second test have a moment where Ricky January does a dive pass? And the answer to that is most likely no.
Yeah.
And therefore,
the odds are against him.
This test is up there with the Ospreys beating Leicester in the 2010 Heineken Cup.
What a game that was, by the way.
The greatest moment. That was a really, really good tense game. Tommy Bowes try for a little chip through.
Off his left foot as well. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Ricky January being carried aloft on the shoulders of other players.
Yeah.
Back when that was possible, when he was only the size of like... He only looked like he'd eaten 16 eclairs that morning. Yeah. Oh, man. Rugby. And in particular, Ricky January, who's the greatest player of...
Should we do Man of Match and Dick of the Day?
All time?
Man of Match and Dick of the Day?
Yes.
Yeah. So where do you want to start?
Man of the Match. Let's do Man of the Match first.
It's turned down Tararira. Who's yours?
Yeah, that's it. Like, I think Brian O'Driscoll has an argument for being the best player on the pitch, but Man of the Match is 10 down to Harry.
Yeah. O'Driscoll he couldn't have done much more. And Matt Field, Brousseau.
For 12 years now, whenever a prop is completely dominant at test level, people go, it's like the Beast in that first test 2009, right? 10 down to Harry is just...
Unplayable, to be honest.
Yeah.
Well, he made the Lions unplayable. You know, they couldn't get going despite how brilliant their attack was, because Tararira was just a one-man wrecking ball, you know? Well, I say one man, there was an eight-man effort there. But you know what I mean? Like, he completely ruined Vickery on so many occasions that we've had to stick up for him in so many ways. The man of the match is 10-0 Tararira, and that's just undisputed.
Yeah. Yep, that is absolutely agreed. And I wonder if we'll be... on the same lines for
I think
the
so. I think the dick of the day for me has to be Christoph Berdos for
intervening
in the most clueless way and just having seven sherries before starting his day at the TMO truck.
Yeah, for forgetting his French-English dictionary as he sat down in the truck. I think there's an argument that Bryce Lawrence for not listening to his TMO and not, having a conversation.
But no, he was correct. The TMO was wrong.
I don't blame him. So
you shouldn't listen to the TMO when he's a bumbling idiot. Like,
also, Fouad Dupré tries to kick the ball and misses it. And people have got dick of the day for less.
Yeah, that's very true.
Christoph Berdos is the dick of the day. We've gone too unanimous.
Yeah. That's rarely happened before.
Can you imagine if in the hit 2009 film Mr. Bean's Holiday, he'd run into Christoph Berdos was in France?
Oh, man. There is a different concept for a story. Like, you could pitch that film.
Yes. Be right back. Just going to give Richard Curtis a call.
Yeah. Mr. Bean's meeting with ex-France rugby referee Christoph Berdos.
Mr. Berdos's Holiday.
Nice. So we're unanimous with both Man of the Match and Dick of the Day.
We're unanimous. Has that
we
ever
rarely
happened?
Agree on anything. I think it has once before, and I can't really remember. Mm. I can only assume Anthony Fayingo was involved.
Of course he was. Yeah, so that brings us through the first test. The great thing about Lions, right, is they play...
So South Africa are 1-0 up, and the Lions have... Another opportunity the next week to put it right and maybe level a series. But Yeah, so they have a game against the emerging Springboks of the week. I take it we're not going to cover that, are we?
No, it ends up as a draw. Dan O'Day my scores in the last minute to equalise.
Yeah.
It's hard to get hold of that game. I have looked. I have tried.
Okay. Well, maybe talk about the highlights at some point, but probably not on the episode on the second test. If we do a wrap-up episode, then maybe we'll have a chat about it. But
we've talked for almost 2 hours, you know?
Yeah.
We'll get through more in the second test. Which
there's
going to
be more talking points next week than this week, I reckon. So next week, the second test, as you say, it's widely spoken about as one of the greatest rugby matches ever, one of the greatest Lions tests. That I am both excited and nervous to get stuck into that.
Absolutely. Okay, we'll see you then. We'll see if I've remembered anything more about rugby in the meantime. Yeah. We'll see if by then they will have made rugby the World Cup from 1991 on the Atari into a real thing.
Yeah.
And we'll see what goes on beyond that from there. I wish you and your family all the best, and may you one day find peace. Good night.
Goodbye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.